You don't know what it was like back in the Genesis days. You don't know what it was like to get beat by the same whack play over and over and over.
Hoss, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good, good, good. Because it is time. Didn't know if you knew this. We just had wings for dinner.
It's time for my stomach to hurt. Is that what time it is?
That's right. It might be. It's time for the Video Destruct Podcast. Today, we're talking the Naomi arcade system.
Yeah, we're going to back our way into Naomi Sega hardware, their arcade tech from the late 90s.
Yes.
But I figure we'll actually start at Model 1. The platform that brought us games like Virtual Racing.
Right.
Star Wars.
Right. Virtual Fighter.
That might have been Model 2.
Might have been Model 2.
Virtual Fighter, like, I've got a full list that we'll consult here in a little bit. But, you know, I mean, this series of hardware that started with the Model 1 and went through to the Naomi 2 boards is the last group of proprietary-built Sega hardware for arcades.
Right.
And it's very important because some of the best examples of 90s arcade games were built on this technology, and it also informed one of my favorite video game systems of all time, the Sega Dreamcast.
Yeah, the Sega Dreamcast. Cool, yeah.
And if you want to know why the Sega Dreamcast games looked as good as they did...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the time that they were
out. It's because they were standing on a platform of a decade of technology that Sega knew very well.
Right, yeah.
So you ended up with just these amazing console ports, these amazing... of original games made for that thing, because these guys had years to dedicate themselves to familiarizing themselves, to pull every bit of juice they could out of this, and make some of the best 90s arcade games.
Yes.
But we'll talk about that more here in a little bit.
Agreed. Cool. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the news. The biggest news thing hitting around right now is Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah, as of this recording, the game, it's been out a few days if you're a EA Access or Origin Access member.
Yes.
But the game actually comes out here at midnight. Most stores, it sounds like, are releasing that thing at 9 o'clock here Eastern time.
Wow, okay.
Just because...
So like a half hour from when we're recording this.
Yeah. And don't worry, we're not going to end this one super quickly to run out and grab it because... Games apparently got issues kind of all over the place.
Apparently. First impressions are not too hot on it. Hoss, I guess you just talk about it, because I don't know much about the controversy.
I wouldn't say there's controversy. I would just say that there's like a lot of backlash when it comes to this game. I think there's no conversation about Mass Effect Andromeda and the way that people were reacting to that thing would be fair if we didn't start... kind of at the beginning.
Yeah.
To make Mass Effect Andromeda, the team at BioWare, without the doctors and without most of the creative staff that made the Mass Effect games that came before this, had to basically entirely recreate the Mass Effect universe and all of its assets in the DICE engine.
Oh, wow.
So the 4 years...
So it's a clean build then? Like from
100%.
Woo! All right.
But the problem is I felt like they stuck way too close to what they did before.
Right,
to the point where it's like, oh, this just looks like a cleaner version of that. So most people are going to look at it and go like, well, it should look better than this. It's like, I don't think you're really giving enough credence to the fact that these people had to completely rebuild everything in a huge expansive RPG.
Right.
Be beholden to everything that came before it.
Yeah.
Without the creative direction of the people that had gotten you there in the first place.
Sure.
And then basically, think about it this way. You had to remake Mass Effect 3 to a certain degree.
Right.
And then after you did that, you had to make a new game in less than 4 years.
Right, yeah.
And
it's a bit much.
It seems like it just hasn't gone very well.
Right.
I guess to start, I watched quite a few streams of people trying to play that on the PC.
Yeah.
Okay. With some of the most wildly variable frame rates I have seen in a good long while in a AAA release.
Right.
Which is crazy because the DICE tech runs incredibly well on the PC. It's right. designed for the PC.
Sure.
But this is not DICE.
Right.
This is BioWare.
This is BioWare.
You know, this yeah, is, yeah. you know, and to a certain degree, making a Mass Effect game with a first-person shooter engine is kind of like using ball-peen hammer to remove a light socket.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's you've got this blunt-forced instrument that can do a whole hell of a lot of things.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not built to do a lot of the things you want right. it to do.
Maybe you needed some pliers or something a little more
yeah.
finesse.
I would start with a screwdriver.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe
yeah.
not jump right to the hammer.
Maybe not jump right to the hammer.
But, you know, to not mix our metaphors too much. You know, the issues are apparent on consoles. It sounds like the Xbox One, both the PS4 and the Xbox One version of the game both have what most games have now, which is an adaptive yeah. resolution,
okay.
where it will scale up or down the textures. Halo 5 is kind of one of the first games that popularized this trend, but right. pretty much everything has been doing this now to maintain frame rates.
Right.
It sounds like, for the most part, in combat, it running on the Xbox is around like 720.
Right.
And the PlayStation version runs around 900.
Right.
And neither version in combat maintains a steady 30 FPS.
Yeah.
And it sounds like getting that game to run at like a steady frame rate, not even saying 60, but just something that feels pretty consistent on the PC right now.
Yeah.
Granted, the NVIDIA drivers just came out today, so maybe it's better. I was right. watching a lot of this last night. But it sounds like getting that thing to maintain a consistent frame rate is like a monumental effort.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I was watching a guy stream Total Biscuit.
Yeah. Total Biscuit.
I was watching him stream last night. He's yeah. a very credible. Yes. He actually ended yeah. up calling it like an hour into his stream where he's really? Like, I don't think it does this game justice to show right. it in this light, but I'm running a Titan X, a $2,000 video card in this computer.
Right.
And I can't get this thing to consistently run it over 50.
Yeah.
Jeez. And it made almost no sense. He bumped it all the way down to low, turned V-Sync off, turned anti-aliasing off, and couldn't get the thing to maintain its consistent frame rate.
Jeez.
It was really weird. I think that game will probably get patched in the first week, and hopefully it hems out a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Sadly, here recently, most big-budget AAA releases on PC have to get a patch within the first week, and then it's like, all right, now the frame rate's not locked to 30. We fully uncapped the frame rate, you know, all that other stuff. We know we added FOV controls back in here, and then games usually start to take shape. I think Dishonored 2 is finally at that point where it's taking shape. That game took longer than I think they would have liked to get.
One would assume that.
I don't think they thought that was going to be as big a deal as it was.
What was it, like half a year? Like 4 months?
About 4 months.
About 4 months.
You know, the Mafia 3 was a big example of that last year. That game ran at a locked 30, and you couldn't, if you went into the game settings and tried to edit that, the physics engine was locked to run at 30, so the game was like running at like crazy proportions and stuff. Yeah,
interesting.
It just ended up with all. Whenever you go into INI files anymore, so many physics related things operate. Right. And if that's not unlocked, it breaks everything.
Right.
It's like what happened with Dark Souls back when people started messing with that, and then they figured out how to do it.
Sure.
But I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole. Like, so performance is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Crashing's an issue. Bugs are an issue. Lighting problems are an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I watched one cinematic from the Giant Bomb guys playing it, and out of nowhere, it's like everybody was mosaiced like they were on a crime show and they hadn't signed on. And
was it deliberate? Was that an artistic choice?
I don't think so.
I would guess not.
They were referring to each other by name. So, but yeah, so bugs and performance are a big issue. But it sounds like the most crippling thing of all when it comes to Mass Effect Andromeda is that, well, one other visual thing that I'll touch on is that every face in this game does not look well at all.
Really?
Some of the aliens look okay, yeah, but like any human face looks weird.
And is it like Uncanny Valley weird? Like just not quite.
Dead eye stare,
yeah,
man.
Oh, yeah, the dead, like, doll stare.
Yeah, like, yeah, oh, you're a robot, man.
you're a toy person.
Oh,
you're
God.
You're not real at all.
What happened? but yeah, so basically they... in this game, it looks like they used some facial scanning technology in here, but sure, they did not performance capture anyone. All of the mouths are hand animated.
Right.
And
oh, okay.
Four, yeah, years ago when Mass Effect came out, we'd only had a couple of games like L.A. Noire come out and do the performance capture stuff.
Right.
And it was much more acceptable. Granted, this game has thousands of lines of dialogue, but
right,
to go back to a game that's not performance captured now...
Right.
Looks fucking weird.
Yeah.
Here's the way that I think, if you're going to do this, if you're going to hand animate a bunch of people,
yeah,
side quest people and unrelated people, hand animate them, I don't care.
Right.
But my main character, my crew, and necessary important characters to the story,
right,
they should be performance captured.
Right.
But I think there's something that maybe happens, like, maybe mixing performance capture with hand animated doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. At that end... it's like none of these people were given any direction before they read their lines. It's like,
oh, really?
Oh, so I got Steve from accounting down here. Steve, I want you to read this.
That's a shame. That's a.
I thought we were in Andromeda to colonize the planet. All right, it's good. Move on, Steve. Thank you.
Next. It's always bad.
We got it.
Yeah, that's it. It's always bad when it's bad direction. Because, like, the best voice actor cannot save a bad director that doesn't convey what the heck is going on.
Well, what's great is that I've seen conversations,
yeah,
where you have two people talking to each other.
Right.
And it's like they're not in the same room.
You know why that is? Probably because
they
weren't.
No, but it's like you got one person who's just, yeah, like, oh, no, what are we going to do? And he's like... Yeah, I think we need to disable the court. Whoa! Whoa!
Well, clearly he's the calm one, and he's the panicky one. It's character. No,
like, oh, so you're saying it's just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah. It's
a psychology.
They got it down, see? No, yeah, that's
and
a shame.
The one other thing that I'll touch on that feel... that by my second playthrough of Mass Effect 2, I noticed it and it started to bother me. By the time that Mass Effect 3 rolled around, it really, really bugged me.
Yeah.
But I don't like the fact that in Mass Effect games, they don't... In dire situations, they,
yeah,
don't take the reins away from you and rush the conversations like The Walking Dead does.
Right, yeah.
So you'll be in an exploding fucking room having a calm goddamn conversation with people.
Yeah, no, I agree, yeah. It takes it away from what's happening on screen and everything. You probably shouldn't present a choice as some danger is happening, or put a quick time event as some big thing is happening if there's no penalty for... Because there's lots of people that love to do the quick time events, but it doesn't end the sequence. It just repeats the sequence over and over. So they just won't do it, and they'll just let it repeat like over and over. And it's hilarious to look at, you know?
The other thing with this is that you can choose to be... the twin brother or the twin sister, and your last name is Ryder.
Okay.
And one of you, whoever you pick, is the Pathfinder.
Right.
So they can't walk around. They didn't want to record two sets of dialogue for, hey, Sarah, or I can't remember what the guy's name is.
Yeah.
So they just always call you Ryder or Pathfinder.
Right. Gotcha. So they didn't
and
mind.
So you're just constantly hearing Pathfinder, Pathfinder. Did you know I'm a Pathfinder? Guess what? I'm the Pathfinder.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Somebody
feel...
just call me Steve.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
like
it doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel like an actual conversation of any sort. It's very.
The only other example I can give of this where it was this starkly obvious,
yeah,
is it 50 Cent Blood on the Sand. All right.
Somehow we always end up talking about 50 Cent
Hang
on. Blood on the Sand.
No, this is actually a perfect...
No, it's fine. Go
this
ahead.
Is a perfect parallel to
sure,
this.
Sure, sure.
Is that 50 Cent recorded 50 Cent lines.
Yes.
And then every other character, it was Lloyd Banks and DJ Woo Kid and...
Okay.
Fuck the other guys.
Other people involved with 50 Cent.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
All the extraneous characters in that...
Yeah.
Always refer to 50 by name.
Right.
Like, yo, 50, we gotta hit that big ass ramp.
Oh, 50.
Yo, the phone's ringing, 50.
Yeah.
And And he would never refer to anybody by name because they didn't want to record one where he's like, yo, Lloyd.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yo, Woo Kid.
Woo Kid, yeah.
It's like, so it's just like, yo, man, fuck that bitch. And just never refers to anybody by name. That is the same thing that's going on here, is that they only can call you Ryder or Pathfinder. Nothing else.
Not your first name, not anything.
That else. And, like, in the first couple hours of the game, everyone wants to fuck you. Although I did see a pretty funny scene where I think this is going to happen no matter what. If you accept this person's advances, you get shot down really hard.
Oh, really?
And it's pretty funny.
That's funny.
Story of my life.
I don't know, right? Yeah.
But
that's relatable. That's what that is.
Yeah, you buy into that.
Yeah, buy into that.
But yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this thing a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And I would like to play another Mass Effect game. I think given this year with, let's just start from the beginning here.
Right.
We got Neo.
Mm-hmm.
We got Nier Automata.
Yeah.
We got The Legend of Zelda. Mm-hmm. Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah.
I mean, Ghost Recon seems better than this, which is not great, but seems better than this. For Honor.
Right.
I mean, there's just been a grip of dope-ass games, plus a ton of stuff that you probably didn't play from the end of last year that's dirt cheap right now.
That's what I'm saying. The end of last year was so heavy-handed, too. It was so tilted.
I would love to play a Mass Effect game. Yeah. I just don't think I would love to play a mediocre Mass Effect game.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
If that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. Absolutely.
Yeah, I hope that this game improves. I have heard, for anybody who's thinking that I'm shitting on this thing, the reason that I'm still interested, despite the fact that I haven't liked what I've seen in the first 5 hours, that I heard once you get past like the 5 to 10 hour mark, that game's way better.
Oh, jeez.
Which is funny, because that's the stuff that they wouldn't let people stream before the game came out, and I'm like,
Why? I hate that. I hate that mentality. I get you gotta get what you pay for and everything nowadays, but just 10 hours to get to the point where the game is good? That's insane to me.
Well, it seems like what probably happened is that at a certain point in development, they looked at what they had made at the back half of this game and thought, what we have at the front half isn't very good, and they took a chance.
Right.
That's very possible, because this game was actually supposed to be out like a year ago.
Right.
If you believe all the leaked internal documents from EA like a year and a half ago.
Sure.
Is that this game's going to be out in March of last year, and then a whole bunch of stuff happened, and they went,
maybe not.
And, you know, I think I'm not going to blame EA for this.
Right.
I will potentially allow blame to be pointed at them for forcing technology on this team that they maybe weren't equipped to deal with.
Sure.
Moving this franchise from Unreal Engine 3 to Unreal Engine 4 would have been an undertaking, but they could have migrated so many resources that you couldn't here.
Right, yeah.
I just think that this was a bridge too far for this team.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of cases that the team itself bit off more than they could chew.
Right, yeah.
You know, think about it this way. Legend of Zelda Wind Waker.
Right.
Is probably the shortest mainline Zelda game.
Right, yeah.
And it's one of the best
because
it's focused.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If they would have made one of the smallest Mass Effect games, but have it be focused and good,
exactly.
You would have finished that game in 20 hours and went,
yeah.
Oh man, I can't wait for that next one.
It's true. They had to cut a lot from Wind Waker, too. It was going to be a much larger game, and they were like, well, we'd rather have it out now before the end lifespan of the cube.
Yeah, its system was already spiraling.
Yeah, it was already spiraling.
By 2003, that thing was, you could see the writing on the wall.
Yeah, so they had to go ahead and just churn it out. And it was a big success, so maybe they should have just focused in on something a little bit smaller scale, but you know, it's just hard to do that nowadays.
Especially when you have a franchise that's known as The Galaxy Is Yours!
Right, yeah, exactly. Go anywhere in the galaxy, talk to whatever species, and recruit them for whatever the hell.
And I think you could have done that by having less planets, and
we
just don't have the resources to get probes out there for you to go.
Right, yeah.
You know, I feel like there were ways that you could
toss an expansion out or something.
Well, you could gate this down into a much smaller yard to play in, where maybe I go back to the same planets a few different times, but at different climates on the same planet, so you still get a diversity feeling without having to just take the entire planet and just go, all right, we're done with this one now, move on.
Right, yeah.
Shoot a probe, go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, making games is hard. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's a hard thing.
If there's one thing that I've learned from my friends that have worked in game development is that even me, with having paid so much dear attention to this and had so many friends that have worked in this for so very long.
Yeah.
I have no idea how hard it is to make a video game.
Right, yeah.
Absolutely everyone in the industry will tell you that. Yeah. So even people who make games that I don't think are good,
sure.
I never trash a developer.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because they did their very fucking best to make the best game that they could.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, or
whether it's time, money, or people.
Time, money, or people.
I think it's all three in this case.
Yeah.
Because if they would have had more time,
yeah.
Way more money.
Yeah.
And more to get more people.
And a bigger team. Yeah.
You got a way better game.
Sure. Absolutely.
But, you know, look at this generation.
Yeah.
We're at the same kind of thing as, like, Wind Waker. We can make the parallel again where this generation's already starting to take a turn.
Yeah. It's true.
And, you know, like, by this fall, we'll be on the third revision of the Xbox One.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I've heard that next year will be another revision of the PlayStation.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, we're on the third revision
of
the
PlayStation right now. Technically, yeah.
Because they're, the third iteration, because they had the Slim and then the Pro.
And the Pro,
but,
yeah.
You know, like, Sony sounds like they're going to leapfrog to another Pro or Pro 2, Pro Plus.
Right. It's going to
PlayStation 4 Pro 2.
They're just releasing the 5 and just doing it. Like, it's a 5! Here.
Well, they'd love to do that because then they can tell you to fuck yourself and throw all your controllers away and all your games don't work.
Here's a new controller with less battery life. Enjoy it.
Oh, great.
Gets an hour and a half of
it. We came up with this new invention. We call it wires. Don't worry, Rumble's a last generation feeling.
Yeah, we don't need that, yeah. Rumble's a last generation feeling. Oh, boy. That's it.
That's all I have to say on Mass Effect, because I haven't touched it yet. I don't want to trash it. And as stated earlier, I don't want to trash developers.
And there you go. All right, cool. We'll see if it improves throughout the remainder of patches.
It has to, right?
Can't get worse.
Even No Man's Sky is kind of an awesome game at this point. Have you seen that new shit?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen any of it.
That Pathfinder patch that they released?
No.
You got trucks now and all sorts of shit. Dude, the game on the PC looks kind of awesome now. Like,
had they just said, like, hey, here's the game at a lower price and we're going to, like, start putting some other stuff out, they probably would have avoided all the brutal reviews of it, or at least just said, hey, here's the game, we're going to be releasing a lot more to it, it's not done, instead of just releasing it and then being quiet. That's the biggest problem that they
have. I don't think them saying anything would have helped anything.
I think it probably would. I think that was mostly the problem, was that they, you know, I don't know, it's a whole big thing, but we'll see.
No, I think
the hype got way too big. And I think they fell into the hype a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Well, I think the important thing for that team to do is the same thing that I would say with Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Is take the next 12, 18 months, continue to iterate on this,
give
a bunch of free stuff away if necessary, win the goodwill back of the fan base, show people that you made good on your promise.
Right.
And then just start working on your next game.
Yeah.
And move on.
And move along. Yeah. It's true. Speaking of moving along, games. What games have we played?
I'll let you go first this week.
I will go first. I played a little bit more Owlboy. Not a whole bunch, but a little bit more Owlboy. That game continues to be very good.
Still want to play that.
Yeah. It still has a great great landscaping of sort of pixel paint art, I would say. It's not actual pixel art. It's like real art, but done the style. Sort of like what's Fez. You know, it's not actual pixel art, it's in that same style. But the backgrounds are beautiful.
It controls. Detail-wise, that game looks like somewhere between a game like Fez.
Yeah.
And something almost like Blaze Blue that looks like hand-drawn art. Yes,
almost like hand-drawn art.
If you combine, if you threw pixels back into Blaze Blue, I feel like you get here.
Yeah, it's basically what it is. It's exactly what it is, yeah. It's super cool. A lot of new mechanics are, it keeps the mechanics being different. You got different friends that you pick up that, you know, keeps the mechanics going differently. The story continues to intrigue me, because it's sort of based around the main character, Otis, who just kind of has a lot of, like, anxieties that you kind of have to fight through, which is interesting. It's weird. I don't know. He sort of has, like, a certain, because he's mute. So he has, like, this sort of, like, trouble communicating with people. That's sort of, like, the whole general idea of it. But it's just a little... It's a little bit of storytelling that I wasn't expecting, let's say. I thought it was just going to be like, oh, this guy, and then you're going to go around here. But then, like, that actually comes into play, the fact that you can't communicate that well, you know, what you're feeling and stuff like that. So very interesting. It's a good little game. Not to spoil too much of that. The other one was a Switch game. My friend Hunter brought over his Switch to my place. It was that the paper clippers, what are they called?
Snipper clips.
That is a fun little game.
Yeah, Snipper clips is great.
That's a great little game.
Yeah, that game's awesome.
It's adorable. Yeah. It's adorable, quite honestly. I just played the demo. He didn't have the full game, but I played...
it does good eye things, like when you're squatting down, you're like,
when you're snipping each other, and like, you're like,
basically, for anybody who's listening to the show, doesn't know what Snipper Clips is, you should go watch some gameplay of this. But basically, the idea is that I'm a piece of paper, and my co-op partner is a piece of paper, and we need to basically collide into one another, and then hit the button to snip off the bit where you're colliding, and you're trying to fit yourself into shapes in some situations, or basically reform yourselves to build things to solve puzzles.
Right, or to put a ball in a hoop.
Yeah.
All sorts of different stuff. Pop balloons, so you have to, like, point yourself into a point and, like, pop the balloons. You got to drag the balloons down, so you got to make a hook. It's all sorts of little fun stuff.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, built by two Flash programmers, apparently. So,
awesome.
So, yeah, two old-school Flash. Like, they were down at, like, Newgrounds, and, like, they did, along with the Alien Hominid guys, so... So.
It sounds to me like I haven't purchased it yet. I ended up buying Blaster Master Zero instead.
Yeah.
But it sounds like probably the most heartwarming $20 you can spend.
Oh, yeah. It's adorable. Like, he didn't have it. We just played the thing. But if I had a Switch, I'd probably get that one because it's like,
hey. I'm going to get it.
That's a good game. It's a good game.
It sounds like something that would be fun to play on my lunch break with my buddies at
work. Yes, exactly. It's a very good thing. And it's one of those things because it's not like a high-intensive game, so holding the dinky little controller doesn't feel terrible. Like, it's still not a great controller, but you're not pressured to do anything.
Yeah, you don't feel like you're like you're being hosed.
Yeah, there's no time limit. There's no dragon chasing you. You're just going around, I need to make this shape. All right. And then, of course, inevitably at the end when you succeed, you just start clipping at your friend and snipping him to nothing. That's how that devolves every time. So, you know, that's it. Oh, and I learned something. When you make the parrot, the first, like, shape that you make a little parrot, and if you hit the clip, button at it, it just starts pooping out eggs. Like,
for no reason. That's pretty awesome.
It's just like, it's whatever.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good. Good time. That's it. That's what I played. That's the two new stuff that I played.
Well, one of the games that I played is a game that you've played as well that you've forgotten.
Oh, I have. Oh, yeah.
Robo Recall.
I forgot all about it. Yes, you're right. Okay. Yes. Thank you for reminding me.
All right. So
let's both talk about Robo Recall.
Back a few weeks ago when we did our VR special.
Yes.
We talked about a VR demo that was a basically non-interactive bit where you're going down a street called Showdown.
Yes.
It's basically a bunch of soldiers getting killed, and at the end of the street, there's a big robot and roars at you, and that's the end.
Yeah.
Well, after they made Showdown, they made a second demo. And this is Epic Games, the Unreal Engine people. This is their proof of concept stuff for Unreal Engine 4 in VR. Mm-hmm. And these are Oculus exclusive titles. So if you have a Vive, you can use Revive to access it. Or if you got an Oculus, just go to the Oculus store. Showdown is free. And Bullet Train, I think they've actually taken it off the store.
Okay.
Because if you have the Oculus Touch controllers, Robo Recall is free.
Okay, nice.
It's a substantial ass game to be free.
That's a substantial game to be free.
So Bullet Train was basically the next evolution of this technology. It uses the warp to move around stuff. It doesn't have the twist mechanic that you get in Robo Recall, the final game.
Right.
You can't, like, change your direction or anything. It's kind of just go, 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 go. Pick up a gun, shoot these guys. You can't die. If somebody shoots bullets at you, you can pick them out of the air and flick them at them and kill them that way. Well, Bullet Train was cool, but it was like a 8-minute thing, and then when you were done with it, it was over.
Yeah.
Well, then they've now released Robo Recall, which is the final product of this. This is a game that's published by Oculus, developed by Epic Games, and the first true... Unreal Engine 4 VR game, and fuck, man, that game looks great.
Yeah, it does.
And man, that game is great.
Yeah, it's so much fun to play that.
That is my second favorite game in VR.
The feeling you get is like, what do they call? They call you player, or what do they call you? They call you something specific. It's like recaller or something like that, inspector something. It's something weird.
Yeah,
because you basically all these robots have gone haywire. And you're basically...
Well, most of the time when they're talking to me, I'm picking things up off the ground.
Right, you're the recall specialist, meaning you have to kill all these robots.
Did you play the game from the very beginning?
I didn't. I played it in the middle.
So, all right. It's the very beginning of the game.
Okay.
You boot it up.
Yeah.
You're standing on a street.
Yeah.
And you're looking at a TV screen, well, like a series of TV screens in a shop window.
Sure.
A couple of robots standing around, and there's this news report that comes out about like how all the robots have started malfunctioning, and you know how they were going to send out recall specialists to go get these people.
Right.
Very end of it, there's like 50 robots standing around you, and they all turn with red eyes at the same moment and lurch at you.
Oh my god! No.
And that was really cool.
That's terrible.
But basically, the game is. And I don't want to say this as a pejorative, but I'll say it this way so that everybody knows what I'm talking about. This is a VR shooting gallery game.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That is what this is. But and there are hundreds of those.
Yes.
And most of them are really bad.
Right, yeah.
But this is the good one.
In case you're curious, this is the good one.
Well, this and Space Pirate Trainer.
Yeah, Space Pirate Trainer.
Oh, fuck, that game's
That's a pretty good game.
That game's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
But this is a really good one. And basically, you start out in a hub that's basically kind of your apartment.
Yeah.
And this game mixes up the formula in some interesting ways as far as movement goes.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, you still have your play space area, like we talked about when we were going over this originally.
Right.
You know, I've got like a 5x5 space, you know, cordoned off in my living room that I can fully walk around in, and it's all virtually fenced, and you know, you're getting near the edges and all that shit.
Right.
But to move around, you point forward, and you basically warp yourself to a point that you select.
With a joystick.
And
with the joystick.
But before you actually click the warp button...
Yeah.
You turn the stick in a direction to show where you're going to be pointing.
Yeah, what facing direction you have.
So say a guy's staring at you and he's got a shield on him.
Yeah.
I can warp behind him, spin myself around, and then just start dumping on him.
Yeah. Fun fact, very intuitive. You wouldn't think it's very intuitive. I learned the teleport pretty quickly. I learned that you could point yourself in a certain direction. No one told me I could do that. I just started to learn it because I saw the arrow.
Yep.
Like, it's surprisingly intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I started getting the hang of it. I was like, oh, okay, I can warp over there. And right behind him, like you said, the guy with the shield, get right behind him and just start plugging him in the face, you know. No one told me that I could reload by grabbing the guns to my side. I learned that myself. Because I was like trying to pick up other people's guns. I'm like, I'm out of ammo. I don't know what to do. And there's nobody else in the room with me. So I'm like, I don't know. Oh, no. I looked down. I'm like, oh, there's guns here. Okay, cool. So that's how you reload. It's like you just basically pull down into your like you're grabbing holsters. Mm-hmm. And you pull up new guns. What I didn't know is you can pull shotguns off of your back.
Yep.
Like, and use those. So... didn't know that was a thing.
So think you're in a Blade movie.
Right.
And you're reaching to grab the shotguns that are on your shoulders.
Boom.
Put your hands straight back to where your shoulder blades are.
Yeah.
And click the grab button. And when you draw back down, you'll have two sawed off shotguns.
Yeah. It's super sweet.
And those take a little bit longer to recharge.
Yeah.
So you dump on some guys with those. And then even your pistols have recharge. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
So you want to actually, if you're starting to get swarmed.
Yeah.
And... it's not to the point where you want to move yet.
Yes.
I wait for people to jump and then start juggles.
Right.
So that I'm using my bullets slower.
Okay.
And then use my other pistol to keep people at bay.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And then once I start to get juggles going.
Yeah.
And people will get distracted or start to move in one direction. You can usually see people move kind of like a tide.
Right.
Then I make my move to jump, warp, flip around, and then pull my shotguns back down and get...
nice.
On everybody's ass.
See, that's pretty cool. My default way of playing was when I was basically out of ammo, before, like, because, again, I didn't realize that I could just pull guns out of my holsters. Nobody taught me this. I would grab the nearest dude to me, because you can actually grab dudes and pull pieces off of them and everything, and I would use him as a human shield. Then I'd just take his gun and start firing, like, while using him for cover and firing at dudes. It was just the coolest thing ever. I was just like, this is amazing.
And if somebody's right next to you, and, you know, you'll usually hear a warp of, like, you need to move, agent.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as you hear that, you flip in a direction, and I'll usually just grab that guy, and you can grab their chest, and then grab their head, and pop the head off of them, and throw those guys at other guys, and it will knock them down. It won't kill anybody.
Yes.
But what it does is it creates space.
Yes, exactly. It gets you a moment. They stop shooting at you, and you can you can get back to the point. I learned that too. That you could just like throw the guys at him. Like, oh, because I had him in my hands. Like, can I just throw this guy? Yep, sure can.
And when guys are jumping into the environment, it's a higher risk shot and more likely for you to miss.
Right.
But as they're jumping down from like buildings or trucks and things like that, you shoot them, it starts a juggle.
Right.
And you get a bonus. Right. Shoot them again, that's a double juggle. Right. Shoot them a third time,
that's triple.
It's juggle. A triple juggle, and then one more, it's a jungle juggle.
Okay.
And that's the highest level that you can get. And all the standard guys will just explode at that fourth shot, and you get like a huge multiplier.
Oh, wow.
For that. So a lot of that game is like the spider guys, most of the time, if they're not in the air jumping somewhere, I don't even bother to shoot them. I wait for them to get close enough that they're jumping at me, and then pop, you get a bonus because it's like a last-minute activity.
Right.
Gotcha. So, yeah, that's how I end up prioritizing my guys. I go shield guys first.
Yeah.
And then anybody else, I just grab them and rip them apart.
Right.
And then the little spider guys, wait for them to jump at me and pop.
Right, yeah. Then there's the teleporter guys, the guys that stop your teleport. Those guys are annoying.
Yep.
Those guys are
annoying. Sucks.
Those guys are really annoying.
They're basically, the only thing I can compare them to is they're the healer in Team Fortress.
Yes.
Kill that guy.
Kill that guy, because they even have the beam, too. They have like the little heal beam, except it's like, takes
you. You want to know who you should be killing right now? That motherfucker.
That guy with the beam that's pointing at everybody else, but no, that game is super fun. Like I said, I like to hold the guys, like I like to hold the robots as human shields. Robot shields, I guess, using their gun, and then when I'm done with them, I just execute them with the gun. I know it's not I know it's not poignant or like needed at all, but it's just really cool to say and just go, boom, and just execute him and throw his body away. It's just too much fun. Like,
and man, that is good looking VR tech.
Yes, it's shocking to me how much I enjoy the VR, the Oculus. I did. It never registered with me that I would even enjoy such a thing. Because I don't buy a lot of consoles anyway. Like, I'll buy, like, if I get a console, it's typically a year later. It's once that generation's done with. You know, I just got a Wii U from you. I don't typically get a console, but that, man. But the moment I jumped into Showdown and how real that felt, that I was in that section and that I got terrified of a giant monster that's not really there. Like, it just was shocking to me how, like, immersive that really was. So, you know, what a cool game.
It's
so cool. Like, and the games are getting cooler. I played more Super Hot that day, too. Super Hot's just amazing. I do still have a motion problem with it. It's probably the same.
Some games are worse.
Yeah, some games are worse. Ripcoil, can barely play it. I finally played that one. Can barely play that game.
Yeah.
It throws me off. That said, I can only do it for a little bit, unless it's one of the non-super intensive games like I Expect You to Die. I Expect You to Die sometimes has a clock involved, but you're not doing anything. You're just figuring out a puzzle.
Yeah.
So you're not like action-y, like running around or like looking everywhere. So that one I can play for extended periods. Probably up to about 15 minutes. But after that, I sort of get vertigo. I sort of start getting a headache. I get the same thing. It's why I can't go see 3D movies. I can't go see a 3D movie. It just throws me off.
The number one thing that I've heard and that I've experienced, it sounds like it kind of corroborates at this point.
Yeah.
When I first got mine, I could play longer than most people. I could play around 30 to 45 minutes at a time.
Right.
Uninterrupted and be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
At this point, I can play 3 hours and be fine.
Jeez, that's crazy.
You just get used to it.
I would imagine you would. Just like anything else.
There's only one thing that still gives me the sickies.
Yeah.
And it usually only happens in Steam VR games. Games that are like in early access. A game starts dropping frames, my stomach goes out on me.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Woof.
Frame drop is that's the one, huh?
Yep, that's the one. Because once I'm experiencing solid movement,
right? Yeah,
and then the visual representation of that starts lying to me,
right?
Whoa,
yeah, that's what happens when like you blow your quads out, and then you're standing up. Well, not blow them out, but like they're numb. Like you've had like a big. If you ever done too many squats, let's say, and you're pretty numb on your quads. It feels like your legs are underneath you,
yeah.
But you're standing.
Yeah.
That's real queasy inducing. Like, that's really queasy.
Yeah, I need to sit down right now.
I need to sit down because I'm not standing up.
Yeah.
Like it's just when the receptors aren't receiving something that's visually compromising to that, you know, to that information, then it's just completely off.
Last summer, yeah.
Which is why Ripcoil was so bad for me, because
yeah.
I'm not actually moving side to side, but I am visually, and it just throws me.
I had something similar to that for the first time since probably high school football last summer when me and my brother went to the racetrack at Kentucky Speedway.
Right.
And we got infield access and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And we were goofing around hours before the race. Nobody's in the grandstands. I just started like, I'm going to run up to the top of the grandstand. Then I'm going to run back down.
Yeah.
And I did it like 3 or 4 times. And those are really like probably 10-story grandstands.
Sure, yeah.
And at the end of that, like, I had to sit down. I was like, I don't think I can move.
You might have to carry me to the car.
Well, my brother's 3 miles away. I'm just by myself being an idiot.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck. And then I'm just rubbing my quads. I'm like, come on, come back.
Right. Yeah.
Am I paralyzed? No, I'm fine. I'm going to be fine.
I'm going to be okay.
This is all going to be okay.
Wake up.
I didn't feel a pop. I think we're fine.
Right.
And then it comes back, and then when you feel it start vibrating, when it's come back to vibrate, we're good.
Yeah, we're good. When you start to feel
that. I'm just going
to
limp my ass out of here.
That warm blood movement starts to go back through. You're like, oh, okay, thank God.
Woo, thank God.
I'm not dead.
Dodged a bullet on that one.
Hey, we're good.
But yeah, VR is something that I think the more well-optimized games, you're noticing, well, I am anyway, just better stability and that kind of stuff. Like, Project Cars is a racing game. It helps that that's a game where you're sitting in a chair, you got a controller in your hands or a wheel in your hands.
Sure.
And you're playing a racing game. You're in the cockpit. You're the helmet. You're the helmet. Dude.
Gotcha.
And
makes sense.
My brother came here. He had never touched a VR game in his life.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a big car guy. He hasn't played a video game in like a decade.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, hey, man, you want to do virtual reality? He's like, only if you got a car game. I'm like, guess what? I fucking do. So sat him in the cockpit. He sat here for a good 30, 40 minutes and just took the headset off and went like, wow, man, how much is a computer like this? Not like, oh, that was enough for me. It was
It's like, I need this.
Now. Guy hasn't played a game in a decade.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, like, I'm considering getting a setup like this. Like,
and my buddy McClain came over last week.
Yeah.
He's an Xbox only guy, hasn't owned anything since the original Xbox.
Yeah.
Other than an Xbox.
Yeah.
And just said, when he left, the first thing out of his mouth was, how much is an Oculus?
Yeah.
How much is the right computer? I'm like, buddy, about $1,200 and you can get yourself everything in it.
Right. It's shocking.
Because they just dropped $200 off the Oculus.
They did. They dropped $200 off it. It's shocking how good it is. Like, I was honestly taken aback. And
just, I think it's kind of laughable at this point.
Yeah.
Call me crazy.
Yeah.
That, granted, they're owned by Facebook, so they can do whatever the fuck they want.
Sure, yeah.
But Oculus has a store that's exclusive to them.
Right.
That has a bunch of stuff that's exclusive content.
Right.
They have the better motion controllers.
Right.
I think they have a more comfortable headset than the Vive.
Right.
It's $200 cheaper.
Right, yeah.
And people are still like, should I get a Vive? I'm like, why? All the Vive shit just works on that damn thing. Although I did encounter a game the other day that said that it would not support Oculus. They just hadn't patched in Oculus Touch support yet.
Gotcha.
But that's all gone now. I mean, those are the outliers.
It behooves them to do that. Like, all of them to have inclusive. You know,
because, like, the Vive has shipped somewhere around, I think, 750,000. Oculus is around 500,000.
Yeah.
The Razer one hasn't shipped much. That open source VR hasn't shipped very much at all.
Right.
But PlayStation VR broke 1 million.
Right.
So, I mean, if you start thinking about it this way, you know, those are all basically on the same base platform as far as functionality goes.
Right.
You know, Ubisoft has already said that all of their multiplayer games are going to be cross-platform between PlayStation, Oculus, and Vive. Because there's just not enough of these units out there for us to all be crazy. It's like, if you get a Vive, you're getting a fine unit. Whatever.
Right, yeah.
It's like, if you want VR, just buy one of the three big ones and you're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I would strongly recommend against PlayStation VR. But if you already own a PlayStation 4 and you don't want to buy a computer, it's fine.
Right.
The tracking on the thing is not great.
Is it not good?
Well, it's using that old
Yeah.
Move technology, and that shit's just not that good.
I mean, it's better than the Wii, which is interesting.
But come on!
I know, I agree. The Wii is it's deprecated.
It's 11 years old.
It's 11 years old now, you know. There was never one to... it's not like Skyward Sword was one to one, let's be honest here. Anyway, I think that's it for what we played.
Yeah, next week I want to talk about Nier Automata. I need to play more of that.
Yes, okay.
I've got a copy of that. And awesome. Also, next week's episode is going to be a Blaster Master-themed episode.
Yes.
Because I will have hopefully finished or gotten close to finishing Blaster Master Zero for the Switch.
Sweet.
Which, preview on that game's pretty fucking cool. If you like Blaster Master for the NES, it uses all the right graphics, it feels right.
Cool.
A few design decisions that I'm not completely wild about, but that game's a ride.
Awesome.
You're going to love it.
Cool. Good time. We'll talk about the original Blaster Master on that one as well. So,
yes.
There we go. So moving on to our topic of the day, which is this Sega Naomi, the Naomi arcade system or hardware or whatever you want to call
it. Yeah, we're going to start with Model 1.
Model 1.
Back in 92, Sega released the Sega Model series of arcade platforms. I mean, I'm just going to give... this is going to be boring for those of you who know some of this stuff, but I'm just going to start... rattling off a few games from the Model series that probably resonate with you.
Right.
Star Wars Arcade.
Yeah.
Virtua Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Virtua Racing.
Yeah.
Daytona USA. Virtua Cop. Virtua Fighter 2. Virtua Cop 2. I mean, some of these are redundant.
Right, yeah.
Sega Rally.
Yeah.
Motor Raid. Rail Chase 2. Virtualon. Virtua Striker.
Yeah.
Gunblade, Sonic the Fighters, Indy 500, House of the Dead, Top Skater. That was in every arcade, and people were constantly trying to break that thing for years. Behind Enemy Lines, Fighting Vipers 2, Sega Bass Fishing. That was a great arcade game.
Oh, yeah, Sega Bass Fishing.
Virtua Fighter 3, great in the arcade, terrible at home.
Mm.
Ooh, that fucking Dreamcast version, man. Fuck that thing up with TV.
That's weird.
Fuck that version. We'll talk about that one day.
It's so bizarre.
They did their best to fucking ruin that franchise with that fucking game. Fuck Virtual Fighter 3 TV.
Good to know.
I love Virtual Fighter, so that should be said first.
Yeah. Right, yeah, sure.
But Lost World Jurassic Park, that was a staple in arcades for a while. Virtuon Oratorio Tangram, Sega Rally 2, Daytona USA 2, Star Wars Trilogy. That's the one that most people are most familiar
that's
with.
That's the one most people. That's the one where you go through all three of the movies.
Yes.
Doing Hoth Battle, Trench Battle,
and the cart thing.
The Endor speeder bike.
The forest thing.
Yeah.
All right, so that is just kind of a summation of just the Model series. The Model series was pivotal in Sega positioning itself as the powerhouse in the 90s. Outside of something that is Mortal Kombat or Soul Calibur, which looked worse in the arcade than it did on the Dreamcast.
On the Dreamcast, yeah.
A Naomi platform. And Tekken.
Yeah.
Name other relevant arcade games from the mid-90s.
Right. I mean, you know, I could name, let's see, relevant? I mean, there were some great ones, but like, let's see, what all did you name?
Like all the Sega shit.
Like Tekken? Tekken was pretty relevant at the time.
Yeah, that's your Namco joint. Soul Tekken Calibur.
Soul Calibur was pretty...
Mortal Kombat.
NFL Blitz.
NBA Hang Time and Showtime. Jams too early.
Yeah, yeah.
Jams and 91
Jams,
joint.
Jams and 91, yeah. Street Fighter the movie The Game. Everybody remembers that one.
That was not an arcade game. That was a home only. The Street Fighter stuff, the Capcom, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom, Capcom vs. SNK.
Sure.
SNK, well, yeah. The Neo Geo ladder era stuff.
Sure.
But really, when you think, I should phrase it this way, big experience games.
It's true. It's
almost
true.
All the Sega thing was, this is a car you sit in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a thing you do? This is an experience? Right. This was harking back to Afterburner in 1984.
Right. You can get the giant projection screen ones for just about any fighting game now. A lot of people do that a lot nowadays. But the first one of those, the more prolific one was Tekken. Tekken took that over.
But the first one of those I remember was a Virtua Fighter. Was a Virtua Fighter giant, huge, like thing with a with, like so much space on just a two game. You know.
Well, and the panel was there were certain arcades where the panel would be like 3 feet away from the television.
Exactly. It was way back there, and it was huge. It was like a giant like a giant theater section, like you were looking at a screen like in a theater.
They focused with their games on giving you, they were probably the most aware that between the SNES, the Genesis, the PlayStation, the Saturn, the N64, that you were capable of getting comparable experiences at home to what you could get at the arcade in a lot of situations.
Right.
So Sega was focusing on giving you the things that you couldn't get at home.
Right.
Good working light guns.
Yes.
You know, Namco did this really well with Time Crisis, giving you the gun that had action on it.
Mm-hmm.
Having that thing just pumping. Pop.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Having that big ass pedal that you could
stamp on. Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
Like, arcade developers in the 90s were really focused on giving you an experience. Yeah. And I think Sega is probably one of the best proprietors of this kind of approach. Like, there was no machine in any arcade I would ever go in that was louder than the House of the Dead machine.
Yes. It was always the
House. Those things shipped loud. And I don't know if it was how much the proprietors had to pay for these things. They're like, I want this to be loud. I want people to find this machine. I want people to throw money into this machine.
I remember one arcade that was local here, actually put muffler foam over the speakers because it was they complained about being too loud.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I mean, if you were somebody who wanted to have one of those machines, say, in a Pizza Hut, you're going to need to quiet that thing the fuck down.
Exactly,
People are trying to enjoy their fucking sausage pizza over here.
Yeah, and I remember talking to the guy. Apparently, he couldn't figure out how to turn it off. Like, none of the employees there could or how to turn it down. Like, the volume on the internals.
You ever like, open the back of an arcade machine?
I'm sure it's insane.
That's a terrifying thing.
I'm sure it's insane. But, you know, it's just like, but they could not find a control for the volume, so they were just like, well, put some foam over it. I don't know. It was that loud.
I'll say this, going back to the Model 1 gear, I remember going to the Discount Movie Theater in the suburbs of Detroit, where I grew up.
Yep.
And the first time I saw a virtual racing machine, it was the first of that series. It was the first real shaded polygonal game I had ever seen.
Sure.
It blew my goddamn mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It did the things that I still hold on to today that mean something.
Right. Yeah.
It was smooth. Mm-hmm. It was fast. It was 60 FPS.
Yeah.
It was seamless. And it was competitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it gave you this visceral thrill that if you beat the whole pack, all 40 cars on the lead lap and your three laps that you had to go around there, you got a free game.
Yeah, oh, wow.
And I played virtual racing. I spent so many allowances on playing virtual racing just because I would just go there and I would, more than play it, I would just stare at it and think, how'd they fucking do that?
Right, yeah.
And that technology carried them through the 90s, all the way through Model 3.
It's true.
Now we'll move on to the Naomi stuff. This is where a lot of you're going to hear a lot of really familiar names in here when you start thinking Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Samba de Amigo, Sega Marine Fishing, Sega Tetris, Sports Jam, Sega Major League 99, that became their 2K baseball game, House of the Dead 2, Typing of the Dead, Tokyo Bus Tour, Virtua Tennis 2, World Series Baseball, Zombie Revenge,
Zombie Revenge.
Monkey Ball.
Yeah.
F355 Challenge. That's a Ferrari game.
Yeah.
Crazy Goddamn Taxi.
The best game ever.
An up-resed, higher texture version of Virtua On Oratorio Tangram.
Nice.
That's, if you were ever going to buy a machine, you need to make sure it's the Naomi version because it looks way better.
Oh, yeah.
the Cosmic Smash that ended up coming to the Dreamcast, Alien Front, 18-wheeler, American Pro Trucker, the Initial D games.
Right. Oh, yeah, the Initial D ones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
King of Route 66, that's a sequel to the 18-wheeler. Virtual Fighter 4, Virtual Fighter 3, Virtual Striker 3, NASCAR 2000, mm-hmm. Sega Racer Arcade, that was that Pod Racer game.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's just so many awesome games that came on that Model 1 through Naomi's series of platforms.
What about C-Man? Was that on there? One? Was that
no, the C-Man, that's exclusive to your home console.
Okay, cool. Just checking. Didn't know if there was a Leonard Nimoy a cabinet out there.
No, the really interesting thing about this technology that, like, you should have adopted some of this to make your Saturn.
Yeah.
You know, when they made the Saturn, I understand what they were doing. Like, Sony hadn't really shown their cards yet for what they were going to do with the PlayStation.
Yes.
And what they focused on making with the Sega Saturn that, in a lot of ways, is really hard to touch with any other platform, even the ones we have now. That's the best-looking 2D place to play video games on the planet.
Yeah.
The way that system uses its secondary processor units to shade pixels is bar none the best that you'll find.
Right.
It's incredible. It's the reason why you still can't pirate Saturn games.
Yeah. Because
they can't figure out how to map it.
They can't map it onto the...
It was so intelligently and complicatedly done.
Right.
But I think that they could have... It would have behooved them to take some of that 3D technology, find a way to pare that stuff down, and jam that into the Saturn. Yeah. So what you ended up with is their arcade division, who's just running amok with hit after hit.
Yeah.
Informed a lot of the design when it came to making there were two proposals for the Dreamcast. Did you know that?
I did not know that, no.
There was the Japanese Katana.
Okay.
And there was the American Dural.
Okay.
The American Dural was their conservative approach.
Right.
They were like, hey, we need this thing to be cheap. Sony's going to come out with an expensive box here in a couple of years.
Yeah.
We need this thing to be cheap. We need it to be easy to mass produce. We need to be able to make some money on this thing. Right. This is our last shot.
Right.
We're running out of money here, guys. Right. This is going to be it.
We're in trouble.
And the Americans ended up winning the argument.
Okay. Yeah.
That's also why, like, when you look at a lot of the marketing for the Dreamcast, like, it was all catered towards an American market in such a way that, like, Sega never really had since the original Genesis early stuff.
Sure.
You know, like, if you remember the commercials where you're zooming over a Dreamcast before the system even came out, and you're zooming into the red start button, and there's, like, all the people around you from all the games.
Yeah.
Harbaugh freaking out. He's you don't know what it was like back in the Genesis days. You don't know what it was like to get beat by the same whack play over and over and over.
I remember that.
That sounds like Jimbo had a bad taco. That's a good one. I definitely think that approach is why the Dreamcast just came out running. Because typically when you think console launch, you think, look at what we got with the Switch.
Right.
You got a couple of games, some ports, and that's it.
That's all.
And then hope for the future is all you really have.
Right.
The Dreamcast came out with just, for the time, insane launch line. There was like 25 games on this thing when it came out. Because a lot of these were ports of these Naomi-based games, these Model 2 games, these Model 1 games.
Right.
And what they did was they souped them up, they hot-rotted them, they made them work, they made them better than ever. In a lot of cases, they added online support for these fucking games.
Right.
And then they had a lot of their other weird stuff that was really cool as well, like your Choo Choo Rockets.
Oh, Choo Choo Rocket. I want to play Choo Choo Rockets so much.
Oh, Choo Choo Rocket.
I want to play Choo Choo Rockets so much. Oh,
but,
man.
You know, and there's a genuine Sega weirdness on a lot of this arcade platform stuff as well. And so much of that shone through in the Dreamcast, because when you had more time to sit down with Puyo Pop Fever or Samba de Amigo, this game where you're using these maracas to dance.
Yeah, yeah.
when you got that stuff home and you got to see how cool it actually was when you spent more time with it, you're like, fuck, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Or Crazy Taxi, where you're just finding these hidden depths
right.
to how much game is actually in this fucking thing.
Yeah. What's the boxing game? Knockout? That was on Dreamcast?
That was... not Knockout Kings.
Oh, man. What was it called?
Because Knockout Kings was the EA game.
Can't remember, but that's the one I remember. That's the one I have the most memories about when playing Dreamcast. Was that one TKO night?
Nope,
it wasn't. Can't remember what it was. But anyway, but yeah, that's the one I have the most memories of and everything. Ready to Rumble, yeah. With a two in it.
How did we forget that?
I don't know.
It's based on my favorite wrestling movie.
It is. It's the best wrestling movie. Let's be honest here. You think that was The Wrestler? No. Ready to Rumble.
I know I asked you, what do you think of The Wrestler?
I like it. I enjoy that movie. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
I mean, Marissa Tomei. She's hot. I like Ricky Rourke before he became...
He's good at it.
Before he became Stifler's mom from American Pie. Yeah,
he does kind of look like
Stifler's mom from American Pie. It's very weird looking. I don't know what happened to his brain, but apparently he decided that he needed a Michael Jackson amount of plastic in his face.
He had already had a bunch done by that point.
Yeah,
he was a boxer.
Yeah, he was
for a really long time.
Sure.
And the thing that happens with some people that you kind of notice is that they'll get like one or two plastic surgeries done. And then they're like, oh, this part looks worse than it used to. And then they just fall into this hole of
true.
Trying to fix it.
It happens all the time.
And, right? You know, it's a damn shame.
It is. I feel like people get addicted to that stuff. It's especially people with addictive personalities like Mickey Rourke and Joan Rivers. Like, they have an addictive personality and they just started dumping all their money into fixing their face. And it was weird. Anyway, yes.
But the sad part about all of this is...
Yes.
Is that this is the end of in-house developed Sega proprietary technology.
Yes.
From there, Sega started making... primarily, these games only came out in Japan and overseas.
Yeah.
But from there, they forged a partnership with Microsoft to make Xbox-based arcade machines.
Yeah.
And that might sound crazy to you.
Right.
But Namco partnered with Sony to make PlayStation 2 based arcade machines.
Mm-hmm.
That's why all those ports of Tekken games look exactly the same at home as they do from the arcade.
Right.
It's because it's just a computerized PlayStation 2 in those arcade machines.
Right, yeah.
So whenever you wanted to upgrade, they'd send you the new placard, they'd send you a hard drive, and they'd send you a disc.
Oh,
and you just put it in there, toss the new hard drive in, throw the new sign up, I have a new Tekken machine.
That's crazy.
Until Tekken 5 Dark Resurrection came out, and then they went to widescreen.
Ooh, there you go. Some cut the edges off and everything. And boxed it out.
But... then they made some GameCube-based games.
Yeah.
They made that F-Zero arcade machine that's fucking great.
Okay, yeah. I never played the F-Zero arcade.
And then since then, they've been working on just PCs.
Yeah.
Like their Sega Rally 3 from 2008, all that other stuff. It's all just...
Man, it would be interesting to see Sega like kind of jump back in into proprietary hardware.
I don't know how they're making this new thing, but you heard they're making a Daytona 3, right?
I did, yeah.
They're not going to make hardware to do
that. No, they're not going to make hardware, probably.
They're just going to throw a fucking PC in that thing.
It would be interesting to see them make proprietary hardware again, given the fact that they had, you know, such success with certain things.
You know what would be fucking great, though? Well, we've democratized hardware so much, and middleware and engine technology since the 90s.
Yeah.
Middleware didn't exist in the 90s.
Right, yes, exactly.
You made it all.
Yeah.
So that's why they had such a leg up on everybody else, is that they had this huge development umbrella, and everybody fell under that, and it's like, oh, you need water? Here you go.
Yeah.
Oh, you need trees? Here you go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
So, you know, what they'll do is they'll just toss a PC in there and put some speed tree in there, and, you know, it's... I just hope the new Daytona's cool. I mean, like, there are Dave and Buster's all across this great United States of ours.
Yeah.
And there's really only one company making arcade games right now. Well, Technically, too. It's rare that you see Namco stuff, but you'll see, like, Pac-Man Battle Royale.
Yeah.
It was made, like, 8 years ago.
Yeah, that's a while ago.
Now they just make, like, here's the world's biggest Pac-Man Battle Royale. The one that they have...
We're just making it bigger!
The one main event is, like, 100 inches, and you're like, do we really... Is this Pac-Man.
This feels excessive.
Yeah, it's the size of my living room, and it's for four dudes to play. No wonder it's $4 to play this fucking... What does it cost to power this thing?
It's like 80% of the power. You unplug this thing, everything gets brighter in the room. Oh, wow, look at that.
But, yeah, the other company that makes almost everything in arcades, other than Namco...
Right.
There's a really good shooter that's Namco, where you can put on the 3D goggles at main event. That one's okay.
Interesting.
Too loud, though, scares the shit out of me. Every time a monster comes up, it goes... Rah! No, fuck! I don't like it. It's too loud.
Anyway. What's the other company?
Put some baffles in there.
What's the other company?
There's a company called Rothrills.
Rothrills.
Yeah, it's that company's owned by a guy named Eugene Jarvis.
Okay.
Who used to make a shitload of arcade games for Midway back in the 80s and early 90s.
Right.
So he left and formed Rothrills. So, like, whenever you see, like, those Fast and the Furious arcade games or that Ghostbusters game. Or,
oh, okay, yeah.
That's, if you look at the side of those, they all say Rothrills.
Rothrills, okay, yeah.
That is a Eugene Jarvis
shooter. The Jurassic Park, the Transformers one, all those. Yeah, okay.
That is all Eugene Jarvis.
Rail shooter. Just big old rail shooter.
Everybody else left the game, and he said, well, there's still going to be Chuck E. Cheese, right?
No, it's a good point.
And he went out and got all these really super cheap licenses for, like, this won't affect that. It's just for your console exclusivity for these Fast and Furious games. I just want it for the arcade.
Right, yeah.
Well, okay.
Right.
And they just sign off the rights to him for almost nothing.
Right.
So he's the one out there making Big Buck Hunter and all that other bullshit.
Wow.
The only other company that actually matters that we haven't talked about in the arcade space would probably be the people that still make the Golden Tee games.
Yeah.
And the Golden Tee games...
Yeah.
That's a company of, like, 20 people.
Interesting. Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's really interesting, like, of who is making these games. Because some of them, nowadays, they're putting phone games up on, like...
Yeah, every time I see Crossy Road up there...
Crossy Road, I'm just like, if you're not playing that on a Monday with an unlimited card, you're a sucker. Like, so you're paying 25 cents out of your card on the Crossy Road game?
I think it's like $2.
Yeah, it's like $2 off of your freaking thing. It's insane. Like, if you're not playing that on the Monday when you have the unlimited, you're an idiot. You're a sucker. It's just, but, like, they'll do that.
Stooge.
You're stooge is what you are. But, yeah, so that's interesting that they specialize in those rail shooter kind of large experience type games.
So no matter what technology that they use.
Right.
I'm excited to hear that Sega's interested in getting back in the game.
Agreed.
You know, their bet on big budget AAA didn't pay off.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck everyone that says that new Sonic game looks any good.
You could take that soundbite and apply it to every 2 years of a fucking Sonic game.
I saw the trailer and I'm like, I still don't see gameplay. I see somebody pushing forward on a stick.
See, here's the thing. Anytime that a Sonic game comes out, if it's even remotely, like, decent or not completely broken, everyone forgets it existed. If it's completely broken, everybody fucking remembers it because it's fucking broken, like Sonic Boom. Like, it's just, you know, like, that's, you know, it's a cursed franchise. It just
I don't never, think it's I just think it's just, it's
yeah.
Relegated to mediocrity.
It is. That's what I mean. It's cursed from the very perpetuation of its content. Because the idea is to go fast. And that's not inherently the only fun thing to do. Especially when you want to mix it with platforming and you're too fast to platform. That's the problem with Sonic. It just, you know. But yeah. Still. I would love to see Sega like hopping back into the game.
I want to see a new Virtua Fighter.
Yeah, I would love to see a new Virtua
Fighter. I'm excited about the new Daytona.
Yeah.
When you build a new Daytona, that means you can potentially make another Crazy Taxi.
Right.
That means you can make another Sega Rally.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you make the Virtua Fighter, you probably got a lot of the technology to make a Virtual Cop.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there are a lot of these franchises that it's been so long since we've had them.
Yeah.
That why the fuck not give it a shot?
Jump on the virtual way, the virtuality game, the VR game. Jump
yeah,
on
make that. Make a virtual make on a, game in
make,
VR.
Yeah, make a virtual on VR game or a virtual fighter or something like that. It'd be crazy. So I don't know. I feel like they have the chops or the understanding if they got people from, you know, because the company's still around. It never folded, so, you know, I'm sure they...
Rumor has it they don't have very much money.
No, they don't have very much money, but it's still, they still exist. So they got people that have, like...
Atari still technically exists.
Well, they still have people who, like, were, you know, proprietors of new technology for video gaming for a long time. I think maybe dive back into that and try and, you know, supplement a little bit of cash out of that.
I heard that they're sometime in the next year, they're going to make a cash grab and pop out an HD version of Shenmue 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
This is me shaking my head.
How about that Shenmue 3, though? It's coming out. It's happening. How about that? Is it happening? Are we close to that? Can we get a confirmation on Shenmue 3? Are we not? I'm looking at my guys. They're saying no. They're saying no confirmation. Okay. Well, anyway. This has been the Video Destruct Podcast on the Naomi Sega system.
Why'd you have to end it on a downer, man? Shenmue. And...
You said Shenmue.
I know, and then you said Shenmue 3, and I'm like, man. Thousands of people are going to get hosed on this thing.
Maybe it will come out. You don't know yet.
I'm saying it'll come out. I believe it'll come out.
Right, but what
I just think it'll be a piece of shit.
Good to know. That makes sense. But anyway, this has been the Video Destruct Podcast. Check us out at VideoDestruct.com. Check us out on YouTube, where I'm going to be putting clips up of this thing. You probably might be listening to the clip right now. I don't know. Probably not putting that part in the clip, so probably not. So you're probably listening to the podcast. Anyway, check us out on YouTube. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter, at Video Destruct. You can also follow us.
Follow me on Twitter! At Hoss, H-O-S-S, underscore, buddy, B-U-D-D-Y. I talk to wrestlers and I talk to people about dead malls.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I also sent a buddy of mine a GIF of The Rock like a week ago, and we could end the show on this.
Sure.
Sent my buddy a GIF of The Rock rolling his head back as he's about to raise the people's eyebrow.
Yeah.
And then he just rolls his head back through again. Like, and my buddy replied to it like a week and a half ago and said, like, I keep waiting for the eyebrow. And I just wrote back to him, just keep waiting. And he texted me today and said, is it ever going to happen? And I had to think about what he was talking about. And that was pretty good. You know what? So follow me on Twitter. We talk about dumb shit.
It's good times. Good times. Guys, that's it for this episode. We'll see you next week where we talk about
Blaster Master.
Blaster Master. That's the one. See you next week.